Hi, I'm Kim.
And I'm Danae. Welcome to Mysterious Mavens Podcast.
We are a true crime podcast, but we also like spooky things.
Spooky things.
But most of all, we really like self-care. Yes. Okay. What did you do for self-care?
So this week for self-care, Steven and I did like a live music yoga class.
Oh my god, I love that. Yeah. For you. I love that.
It was like, I was actually subbing this specific time slot, but if he does live music a couple times a month, then he gets free yoga.
I mean, yeah.
So
fucking do it.
It was kind of cool because we used to do this all the time, and now with my schedule, I can't really. I mean, I teach during the week and it's like 7:30 a.m. So like,
yeah,
it'd be kind of weird to have like a live music class. So it was kind of cool because it was like, oh, this is like old times.
I have to ask, are you that person in the morning that you can't stand live music, like too much noise, or are you okay with it?
No, I'm okay. It and like,
because there are some people that can't handle it.
His mornings. Live music is like pretty chill because it's like hang drum. It's like,
yeah,
it's like chill.
Okay.
There's like chimes. There's
love there's wind sort chimes. Of
like hand drums and like it's like it's not like you're plugging in a guitar to like an amp or something. It's
you're not AC/DC. Like, yeah, Metallica, you're not like this shit.
Hardcore like jamming out. It's just like drums. So, so yeah, that was my self care. It was fun. It was exciting. It's good to get back in the groove.
Yeah.
What was yours?
So I've been going through it, as you know, and I'm not going to get into it on here, but it's just, I've been taking a lot of time to, like, nap this week. Good. I know that sounds like something weird, but, like,
I don't think it's weird.
After work, I've just been taking some time to, like, just get some rest. Extra rest. Yeah.
Good.
Like, the other day, I know it was good rest because, like, I fell asleep and woke up in my living room and I didn't know where I was.
Well, that's a good nap.
I was like, well, here's it. But it was just, like,
I used to call that a coma nap.
It was needed. Clearly, yeah. Obviously. But, yeah, it was really needed and it felt really good and... Yeah, I don't regret it.
Yeah, so. Sometimes the best thing that you can do for yourself is rest.
Coma nap. Yeah, I needed it, so.
Mm.
Naps. Guys, always take a nap.
I love a nap.
I do, too.
Some people are like, I can't nap, and I'm like, what's wrong with you?
seek
suck
therapy.
To suck.
Like,
I love naps.
Yeah, fight me. I don't care.
It's my favorite.
So what are you going to tell them about this week? I know it's a long one.
And
we lied to our husbands about how we started recording an hour ago.
Shh. Don't tell them.
I mean, 15 minutes ago.
It's fine.
It's fine.
So, sorry, Steven. This week, I'm going to tell you about an MTV music video that found missing children.
Okay. I'm going to tell you right now, this was on my list.
Soul Asylum's Runaway Train?
I don't know much about it, but I was like, I love that. I love that.
It's
so, yeah, it's amazing.
It's pretty cool.
Guys, you know when, like, at the end of episodes we talk about, like, if you know anything? Like, people know stuff.
People know
stuff. But
I don't think
they understand who they need to contact.
Yeah.
So, go on. I'm so excited. Because this is, like, you know, because in true crime,
there's, like, good news.
And there's like bad news, but this is just all like somebody did something just like
why to not? Like help the world.
And they like did a good job because this helped so many.
Yeah. So in 1993, MTV was obviously like in full swing showing.
They weren't music doing videos. Teen Mom yet. No awkward. They
no,
were not.
No. It was all just like
RJ Berger.
Truly music TV.
Yeah.
And they were showing music videos, and this band called Soul Asylum, which like everyone's heard the song, well probably, released a music video for their song Runaway Train. It's like Runaway Train, like you've heard
you,
it.
You know
it's like
it's a, the da, 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 da,
da, da. Yeah,
yeah.
Guys,
you know this song. Trust us.
Look it up if you don't. It's on YouTube. So this particular music video featured 36 missing children in
what
their photos.
What a good way to put
to get it out there.
Yeah,
like how smart, like. MTV, people are watching, young people are watching, people are paying attention.
Also, this band kind of sounds a little bit like Bon Jovi.
Absolutely.
I think John Bon Jovi. Like, totally. It's very John Bon Jovi. Like, listen to it if you don't know what I'm talking about. But it's like a lot of people think it's him, but it's not.
It's, yeah. So this is the story of how a music video helped to find 21 of those 36 missing children.
Okay. If this song didn't come out, who knows?
Right. Who and knows? So also, I just want to say that like when they came up with this video, the director was like, actually, we've got to make like three versions of this video because they had the US version that showed this is like the 36 that I'm talking about. In the US version, they had, I'm only talking about US.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole bunch of other.
Okay. Didn't know they did this for other countries. Yeah. That's incredible.
They also did a whole different version, not a different version of the music video, but like different photos.
Children.
And children.
Here's a question
for the
for
UK and for Australia.
Did they do this after they saw the response to the US music
yes.
video?
Yes. So okay. after, so initially, like the
Smart,
first video was just
way.
Like the US version.
Sure.
And after Runaway Train started rising up in the charts, the director, Tony Kaye, was like, oh, we need more.
Oh, this works?
Like, so now this song is becoming like kind of, you know, a hit on the charts. So he then made the UK and then the Australian versions.
I love that. That's what I was
which
curious.
Is like so fucking cool.
Yeah.
So the US, actually all of the versions, the names and photos were provided by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Can I ask a question before you move further?
Mm-hmm.
Did they also use age progressed pictures?
They did.
Okay.
Well, not in the music video.
Okay.
So in the music video, it was like high school photos or like recent photos of those children.
How long were these kids missing for?
So
ones in the music video?
A lot of them were only missing for like a few years. Like it okay. started in like, I think, so the music video came out in 93. Some of the late or like earlier people that were missing, like the longest people that had been missing for were from like 1988.
Okay.
So like pretty recent.
So 5 years was the
in
longest.
In regards to like they weren't missing for like 20 years kind of thing.
Okay. That's what I was curious about.
And they were all kind of, most of them were like teens, like 12-ish to like 16. There was one in the US that was like a 2-year-old when he went missing.
So guys, earlier today I made a joke about how, and not in a joke in a funny way because it's not funny, but I made a joke about how they don't like to search for kids because they always assume kids are runaways. And Danae was like, oh, my story's gonna reference that.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of years where they didn't want to search for teens. So they're like, they're a runaway. And it's like, even if they're a fucking runaway, they're still a missing child.
Yeah. And that's where there's kind of like this twist to this story is that a lot of these kids were runaways and they didn't want to be found. So there is that kind of aspect to it where it was like in the music video, it was kind of like they showed a lot of like they're like almost like alluding to like kidnapping. Like there was one portion of the music video where like there's this lady like kind of like hanging out in like a parking lot. She's like smoking a cigarette and she's like staking out this lady who has a baby. And the mom kind of like looks away from the stroller to like try on some jewelry or something in a store. And this lady like steals the baby from the stroller.
I mean, because at the end of the day, like, you don't know if they are kidnapped, you know?
And then there's like, you know, like a guy with like an old man with like candy. And he's like luring children into his van kind of
thing. That's creepy.
So like there's a lot of sort of references in the music video of like, oh, like maybe perhaps these children were like kidnapped. But in reality, a lot of these kids who were quote unquote missing were
missing on purpose.
Yeah. Okay. And there's also like the song itself, like lyrically, it's not even about like missing children.
It's just the title alone.
It's helps. Just the title where it was like runaway train. Like the director was kind of like, oh, runaway. Like he kind of associated like runaway with children and like came up with this whole concept. But in actuality, the singer David Perner was going through like really depressing time in his life where he thought he was losing his hearing.
Oh my God. Which I can't imagine like, as somebody that's your like.
Yeah, like that's your entire like livelihood is like, okay, I'm like making a living off of like being a musician and now I'm losing my hearing. Like that's devastating. And on top of that.
So there is the chorus is runaway train, never going back.
Yeah.
Wrong way on a one way track. Seems like I should be getting somewhere. Somehow I'm neither here nor there. Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's more so about like a bleakness and a depressing.
It is. I'm reading on and the lyrics are very bleak.
It's not specifically like, oh, children running away or whatever.
Like what and a good way
so
to
on top
it.
Of like David Perner, the songwriter slash singer frontman, thinking like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my hearing for the rest of my life. The band Soul Asylum had also been dropped from A&M Records with like little
notice. Wow, so two blows right there.
So he was like, I'm depressed. And he picked up his guitar. He's like, let's do this. And he said he wrote the song where he was at a downward spiral in his life. And he didn't know much about anything as far as what was going to happen or what was happening, but the whole prospect of believing that you're going deaf when you make music for a living was insane. So like,
well, if you remember, there was like, maybe you don't remember this. I remember learning a music class about Beethoven.
Oh yeah.
Who also lost his hearing. And he was like, apparently people were just talking about how big of a dick he was.
Yeah.
But I'm like, can you imagine you plan That's your entire like your
passion.
Life? Yeah. You plan your entire life around like music.
Yeah.
Because that's something you're very talented at. And you lose the one sense that of like everything like your important built your sense. Life around. Like yeah. I can't even imagine Wild. That. Yeah.
Yeah. So fortunately, David Perner's hearing did sort of like heal itself with some extra love and care. So Soul Asylum eventually they got picked up by Columbia Records and they
it's a big name.
They made an album which featured the Runaway Train hit. And they needed to make a video because like obviously like it was the
music
90s.
Videos like in that the was 90s huge. Like, that's you had to do a good music video.
Yeah,
Hi, like, Spice Girls.
People love that shit.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the director, Tony K, he was like, we're going to make a video. We're going to feature missing children. And he was kind of like taking inspiration from, remember when I did like the milk carton stories, like, yeah, of missing children?
Yeah.
So like in 1984 is when they started putting missing children on milk cartons. So he was like, but what if we fucking use this in a music video
song that people are listening to?
And everyone's watching MTV.
Yeah.
Everyone is watching MTV. And he's like, so we could actually like find these kids. But yeah, so that was kind of like the idea behind it was like,
because they play music videos all day.
Exactly. And yeah, people are watching it.
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone is watching it.
It was cool.
So if you like recognize someone, you could really be a help.
Yeah.
So
any information is helpful.
Right. Yes, and mostly. He even said, like, the director was like, this was like probably the most important thing that like MTV could have ever done because it like saved people's lives.
I love that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Right. So 11 kids from the US video are still missing. 4 were ruled dead, and that leaves 21 that were found.
Okay.
Quote unquote found.
Well, I mean, even if like the downfall is obviously finding them that they were deceased, it still gives the family answers.
Yeah.
Regardless of if it's good news or bad news.
Right. So some of the kids who are now like adults in their 40s, 50s, they don't necessarily believe that the video saved them. Some of them didn't want to be found. Some of them were fleeing from shitty family lives and abuse. And they felt that the only way that they could escape was by leaving. Mm-hmm. And then they were reported missing. And then now they're featured on this video. And they were like, fuck. Like,
okay, I can understand why that's unsettling.
So guitarist Dan Murphy recalled a girl confronting the band at a meet and greet and asking, why are you fuckers trying to ruin my life?
Okay.
So
I can certainly understand from a standpoint of they're trying to like help these kids get found, but I can understand like there are some kids that like fled that unsavory situations.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and like the band members are just like,
what do you mean?
It's our artistic, you know, thing, and we're trying to help people. That sucks,
because like I get why they did it, but like, yeah, you don't understand the negative repercussions of it.
Totally. So I'm going to talk about a few that were found.
Yeah.
And we're actually willing to do an interview with Nick Kepler in an article that he wrote for Sony Entertainment in August of 2023.
Were a lot of these kids over the age of 18 when they did do like interviews?
Yes.
And when they were found?
Yeah, they were like 40s, 50s when they interviewed.
Okay, so technically, okay, but when they were found, were a lot
when they
of them?
Were found, they were over 18.
Okay, so yeah, as much as it sucks, at least they weren't like expected to go back to their shitty situations. Okay.
So this guy Nick Kepler, he wrote an article for Sony Entertainment in August of 2023. It was titled, did the Runaway Train music video really save 21 kids? And this was just like, this was a huge resource of information for me that was like so, so detailed.
Yeah.
And it provided a lot of insight.
There are a lot of really good resources that you're like, I have to use this more than the other ones.
And later I will discuss the people who are still missing.
Sure.
So we're starting out with the people who were found and were alive.
All right.
So number one, we're going to go with Joyce Collier. So she's now 47-year-old Joyce, and she said when she saw the video, she was like,
shit.
She was like, when I see it, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, what the hell?
Was she the one that confronted the band?
No.
Okay, so a lot of them were mad. Okay.
She's like, in my case, I didn't want to be found until I was ready to be found. So Joyce was born in 1976 in Cleveland. when her father died, she became basically kind of like the sole provider for her two younger siblings.
What the fuck?
She was forced to grow up really quickly.
Yeah.
She never got to enjoy her childhood. And on top of that, her mom started dating a man who started sexually abusing her.
Poor girl.
And at 15, she was like, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah.
So she's like, I gotta get out of here. She ran away with her boyfriend at the time, and she became pregnant.
Oh, no.
Luckily, though, her boyfriend's family let her stay with them in the nearby city of Parma. She had goals and dreams. She was like, you know what? Just because I got pregnant at a young age doesn't mean that, like...
Doesn't define me.
Exactly. And she was like, I'm gonna get my GED. I'm gonna get a college education. And she did that. So she knew, though, that she kind of had to, like, lay low until she turned 18. Because she was really, really afraid that if her mom knew where she was and knew that she had a baby, that her mom would force her to give up her daughter for adoption. So she was like, I'm not doing that. I'm keeping my baby girl.
With the thought of us being pro-choice, she's allowed to do what she wants.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so she, in her own words, she was like, I just kind of like stayed away from Cleveland. I stayed with my boyfriend's family in Parma, took care of my daughter, did my thing. That was it. So the runaway train video was a complete surprise to her when she saw it. And she was like,
shit.
She recalled a friend telling her, they were like, hey, like,
you're in a very popular music video
about missing kids. And she was like, what?
Fuck.
She turned on TV. She watched MTV for a few hours. Eventually,
the
video came up. She saw herself and she was like, what the fuck, dude? So when Joyce turned 18, she went to the Parma police station and she was like, hey, I'm alive. I'm not missing.
Please let them know to not contact me.
Like, take me off the, like, missing people list or whatever.
It just sucks. Like, I say this like it sucks, but I get it too. It's like,
yeah,
when you're under the age of 18, you can't just disappear. But at the same time, if you're in a bad situation, like, what other options do you have to do? Yeah.
So this is just like, it like breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Her mother had to come to the station to confirm her identity, and she brought her brother with her. And when Joyce's brother ran...
So she kept in contact with her brother?
No. When Joyce's brother ran up to hug her, Joyce's mom berated him. And she was like, that's a stranger. We don't talk to strangers.
Oh, fuck off.
Exactly.
Because I'm sure she was happy to see him.
Yeah. Him. And not the mom.
Not the mom, but like...
How... What a horrible thing to say.
What a terrible... That's a stranger. No, it's somebody who went through
literally
some shit.
Literally my sister, you bitch.
Smart enough to take care of myself.
Yeah. So Joyce continued...
But I love that the brother still wanted to, like, maintain contact. Yeah, of course. I love that.
So Joyce continued to stay with her boyfriend's family and raise her daughter. They seemed to be kind of like the normalcy that she craved, like... They seemed to be stable. They were safe. Like, she trusted them.
I'm sure a lot of the kids didn't have a lot of normalcy.
Yeah. And so each day she dropped her daughter off at daycare. She walked to go take her GED classes. She passed. And then she ended up taking some, like, classes for nursing, but she never ended up completing the degree.
It's a lot of work.
She had two more kids, had several different jobs, whatever. And she now lives in Sumter, South Carolina, and her kids are grown. They're out of the house, and she's like, this is great.
God, I had them so young.
I can do whatever I want. Yeah. And she awesome. Said, it's amazing. I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah.
Okay, next we're going on to Ginger Sue Hudson, who is now known as Ginger Vila.
My sister and I... This is a fun fact. She told me she really liked the name Ginger for her daughter. And I said,
It's like Spice Girls.
No, don't. Because I was like, that daughter will be born with red hair and it's going to ruin her life. Because we have the red gene in our family, so it wouldn't be shocking. And my sister's like, you don't think I should name her Ginger? And I'm like,
no.
No, I don't think you should.
Don't name a Ginger Ginger.
I don't even think it was like even close because she likes B names. But I was just like,
she likes B names.
Do not name your daughter Ginger. No.
So there's actually a couple people in this that are from Colorado.
Oh, wow.
So okay. Ginger was born in 1975. She grew up in Denver.
Okay.
When she was a teenager, she developed a severe fear of crowds, and she had horrible social anxiety.
I don't blame her.
So, like, she was totally fine if it was, like, an individual, like, yeah, me and you just hanging out, like, one-on-one. But once it became, like, a group, it was, like, debilitating for her. Like, to the point, you know, where she was like, I don't want to go to school.
Those crowds, when we went to, like, that concert...
Yeah.
It was a lot.
Malls. Yeah. Like anywhere where it's like super crowded.
I don't blame her.
She was not about it. And yeah, it sucked because like her mom, who was a single mother, like no hate on that, but she just was like, she didn't get it. She was just like, fucking go to school, dude. Ginger just felt like she had no option, but she was like, I need to leave. And so she ran away from home.
I'm sorry, what age was she again?
At this point, she's 16.
Okay, so she's almost of legal age anyway.
Almost. She's close. Yeah. So at this point, she made an arrangement with a friend to secure his immigration status. So the deal was she could stay with his sister in Las Vegas until she turned 18, and then they would get married so he could apply for a green card.
I mean, I see a multi-beneficial.
Exactly. It benefits everyone. So yeah, she got on a bus to Vegas, but the sister backed out when Ginger's mom got wind of it and was basically like, you need to come home. Like, no, you're not doing this. Come back to Denver.
Do I fault her mom?
No. Absolutely not.
But there's not really no reason for a teen to run away. So. Yeah.
So
that sucks. That's a hard position to be in.
As she was returning on a Greyhound bus back to Denver from Las Vegas, another like kind of traveler, transient person was like, what you should do is just like go to a truck stop and like hitch rides. And she was like,
that was huge.
She was like, cool. Yeah, I'll do that. Because then she doesn't have to pay for like the bus fare. She can just
get a ride. I can't totally say that's insane. Like, that makes sense. But also, like,
so unsafe.
Yeah.
I mean, no, now so looking unsafe. Back, I'm like, Jesus no, Christ. No,
so unsafe, but I'm saying,
she's
like,
16.
I'm going with at the time, though, it was so much more normalized. You can see the
sense that she was like, yeah, okay. Yeah. So she took that advice, and after a few months of riding around highways, she met her boyfriend. And this dude, he was a truck driver, so he lived in his truck, and when he wasn't driving, he parked it at a dispatch center in California, and, like, things were good. It kind of worked out for her because she was like, well, I have social anxiety, so, like, I don't like to be in crowds, so she could just kind of, like, hang out in his truck when he wasn't there, and, like, I don't know. It ended up working for her. So
it looks like she escaped a situation that was not super healthy. I mean, we don't know the ins and outs, but sure, it seems like she kind of got, yeah, absolutely.
So she was like basically saying that she would stay in the pickup truck and then like go to a restaurant, use the restroom, buy some food, and then go back.
I feel like that would be really hard, is like having to use the bathroom.
Yeah. And she was like, in her mind, it was better to just be, like, with him living in this truck than, like, out in the world alone.
Well, or at home where mom doesn't understand what you're experiencing.
Yeah. So this dude, we don't know his name. She doesn't mention his name. This man was 35.
I'm sorry. And she was 16. Okay. I am 35 right now.
Yeah.
I am currently married to someone who is 31, And almost that is too young for
me. Can you imagine?
I cannot even kind of imagine a 16-year-old. That's disgusting.
Yeah. So not only was he 35, but he...
That's so creepy.
He had a daughter that was only a year and a half younger
than Ginger. So he was underage when he had a kid.
Not even, because if he's 35 legally and she's blonde. 16.
She's my age.
And his daughter's 15. He had his daughter at like 20.
How would you feel if your dad was dating someone underage. Your age?
Well, yeah, no, totally weird.
No, I'm legally but, blonde.
Like, yeah, why is... Like, it's creepy.
That's so creepy. That's so creepy.
She said, in her own words, she said, I don't think he was a predator. He probably thought I was over 18. Whatever, dude. So, obviously he wasn't, like, that much of a creep because they lived together. He didn't, like, abuse her or anything or, like,
okay, act like a I creep. Do love hearing that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the man's daughter spotted Ginger in the Runaway Train music video. And she was like,
that looks like somebody girl. I know.
She literally, like... recorded it onto a VCR, you know, like as you do.
Oh, that is the most, like, yeah, 1993 thing.
And then she showed Ginger and she's like, that's you, bitch. And she was like,
you should be careful.
Oh, cool, 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 cool. And like, but how Joyce Collier was doing, Ginger was laying low until she turned 18. She was basically like, let me become an adult. And then, like,
I get it.
You know,
I get I'll it.
Live my life. Yeah. And she basically figured, like, no one would recognize her because, like, she barely left the truck.
Yeah.
And so when she did turn 18, she reestablished contact with her mom, even though she still lived in California. And
she was Denver?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she and the trucker, the guy, the man... They ended up renting an apartment, but they broke up in 1999.
Okay.
So Virginia now lives under one roof with her daughter's father, and her current boyfriend. She says that antidepressants have stabilized her and that essentially, like, life is good. Okay. Jessica Molnar, born Jessica Williams in 1975, she was born in 1975. She said she never had a dad. She grew up in Colorado Springs, where her mom seemed to always be dating someone. And
the amount of stories of people that had moms that were putting, like, dating some random man over their
like child's. Every week. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so upsetting.
And at 16, she was just kind of like, fuck this. Like, this household is toxic.
I'm better off on my own.
Let me get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So she took a bus from Colorado Springs to Dallas, and she stayed with a friend who made her a fake ID because she was underage. So this ID helped Jessica to get a job at a burger restaurant. And then at one point she went to Walmart, and eventually she saved enough money to, like, get her own apartment. So she had her own.
Must be nice.
She had her own life going. Yeah. Like, she was doing well for herself. And when she eventually saw her photo in the video, she was pissed. She was like, I don't like people knowing my business. Like, I worked hard to basically make a new life for myself, to create this new reality. And now these fucking people are, like, looking for me. And since she was legally an adult at this point, she wasn't missing anymore. So she turned 18 in the fall of 1993, and the video came out in 1993. So it was, like, August of 1993. So fall of 1993, she turned 18. So she was like, bitch, like, I'm
You know,
good.
It's crazy how much I'm like, oh, this video did overstep. But, like, when you first announced it to me, I'm like, that sounds great.
It sounds amazing.
But I can certainly understand.
But then when you look
this
deeper
video
into it,
overstepped a lot of boundaries, you know, for people. Because it's like,
but how are they to know the backstory of every fucking person?
Yeah.
Know?
I totally agree with you. Like, they didn't know the implications.
Hell no.
They were trying to do a good thing. They turned a music video. But it's like, there are so many different things that, like, it's like, oh, shit, I didn't even think about them.
Right. So she ended up calling her mom. She got back in contact before she saw the video.
Okay.
Then she saw the video and she's like, what the fuck am I missing?
What's happening?
So over the years, Jessica earned her high school diploma. She got married. She had two kids. She ended up getting a divorce. She had another kid. She adopted her brother's two biological children.
Oh my God, why?
I don't know. She now lives in Oklahoma City. And she works for the Head Start program, which she's been at for 20 years. And,
good for her.
And then she moved on to a cannabis dispensary. So she...
Lucrative industry.
She literally, she was like, I never regretted leaving. In her words, she said, I left to break cycles, and I did. So, like, good for her.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got another Colorado lady.
Colorado. That was the cheerleading, sorry.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah, no, I hate it. I hate it. Same
so,
as you.
So, Boulder, Colorado resident Emily Poise never understood why she didn't fit in with her peers.
Aw, Emily.
She was, like, bullied and teased relentlessly.
Okay, I'm gonna ask a question. Did she have like a reason, or was it just not that any reason is okay to bully?
I know what you mean, though. But years later, she was diagnosed with being on the spectrum.
Okay,
so she was like
not saying okay as in
incredibly intelligent, and she was super high functioning, but she just kind of like didn't. She just, like, didn't social fit in cues. With the other other kids, where it was, like, they all were just like, you're a weirdo. And she was like, okay, I'm trying my best. But at this... Oh, also, she was born in 1978.
Okay. So at this point, she'd be 78, 52? Or 15, sorry. 15 at 1993.
Yeah.
Okay.
So at the start of her adolescence, she discovered Boulder's punk scene, and it was full of misfit kids who just felt like they didn't have a place where they fit in.
Sure.
They were like, I don't have friends at school. I feel like even in my family life I don't fit in. So it was kind of like these kids like banded together in their own little like weird society, I guess, where they were like, none of us fit in, but we all fit in together.
I hate that, like, they so felt cute. That way, but I do like that they like that felt they had a group.
They found community in each other.
Yeah.
So some of these kids were unhoused, and they were able to just kind of like avoid their home life completely. And she was like, cool, I want to do that. But
did she have a good relationship with her family?
Well, that's what I was about to say. Okay. So unlike some of the kids in the video where like they had like abusive family lives or whatever.
Yeah.
Emily's parents were even tempered college professors. They provided an upper middle class home.
I knew what you meant.
And she was like, they were great parents. Like, she herself was like, they were really great parents, but she felt isolated, that she just like didn't feel like she had a place. So they
I
were
can
like,
understand, like, not in a way against her parents, but she's like, I don't fit in. And I guarantee your friends were kind of in her ear, like, your parents don't get you like we do, you know? Maybe.
And so, and like, and her parents seemed to actually be, like, really cool because at 13, she got on a Greyhound bus and she went to San Francisco and she kind of, like, joined this, like, big community.
By herself? For no reason?
Well, there was, like, punk kids there. There was, like, this big community of kind of, like, misfit kids.
That's still a big risk, especially like when you're like
when you're that young,
struggling with autism too. Like that's a like big trip.
That was like undiagnosed in the time that she went, right?
Sure,
like she was only diagnosed like later in life.
That's brave.
And so, and she checked in with her parents regularly.
Okay, good.
So she said, they just wanted to know that I was alive. They didn't pressure her to come home. She said, I think they were scared that if they did that, I wouldn't contact them anymore.
Okay.
So they kind of like gave her the space to like live her life, which I'm like wild at 13.
You know,
like that's like
understandably at 23 I didn't have any
sure, but at 13 are you fucking kidding me?
At like, 13 I was an idiot. Like my parents would have been in their right minds to not like
so
respect it, but good for them feeling like they can trust
her. Good for
them
for kind of being like
yeah,
let's give her the space she needs. We don't want to violate her trust. We don't want to like make her go no contact kind of thing, which I'm like, that, oh my
Tracks.
God. I just like, oh, 13 is so young.
I remember at 13, I was wearing like shirts with like puppies on them.
Yeah.
And I didn't know like what, I don't, like.
How would you live in the world by yourself?
Like I took the bus to school. Could I find my bus? Yeah.
Sometimes. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But like, I mean, every day.
But it was labeled. But like, also like living on your own?
Absolutely not.
Living on your own at 13.
No.
So at 15, she relocated to Minneapolis. She was staying with some friends. They were all hanging out watching MTV.
Okay. Can I just say from experience, it is very hard going from Colorado to the Midwest. Go on. It's just really hard. So I'm just like, oh, I respect it.
So they're all watching MTV. They, of course, see her picture in the fucking video.
She's like, God damn it.
And Emily was like, fuck.
What are you doing?
And when she was in, Jesus Christ, when she was in San Francisco, like the cops, like they kind of like didn't have time to like give a shit about like runaway kids.
Yeah.
But in Minneapolis,
they had plenty of time.
They were much more like hands-on about runaway kids. And she was like, oh no, now like people could recognize me essentially. Like they've seen the video. They could maybe like pick me out of a crowd.
Especially in a smaller town.
Totally.
You know? Yeah.
And to her relief, she was never actually recognized in the video. But the city punk scene started taking a weird turn.
A weird turn in what way?
It was infiltrated by angry men in their 20s.
Oh, men ruining something? Danae.
Who were drunk and using drugs.
Men never ruin anything.
Men don't ruin
things.
Let's
calm down.
And, like, people were no longer... It was not so much like a community anymore of like where people were banding together in unity and like taking care of each other.
Yeah.
It was more so like this weird, almost like when we were talking about like the black metal death bands where it's like people are like trying to one up each other.
I gotta be honest with you. There are a lot of episodes we have recorded that like Norwegian black metal band sticks with me to this day.
Yeah,
because I remember listening to it just to make sure like we post the right pictures and everything and recording it. I'm just like, there were so many layers to it.
So many layers. But so it was kind of that vibe where like people started doing like shitty things to each other. It started
escalating,
and it was like kind of like almost like funny if you were like a shit person to like your friends. So she was like, yeah, no, goodbye. So at 17, she's like, I'm gonna go ahead and go home. So she went home.
You know what? I gotta give her props on maturity.
Right.
Knowing when to throw the towel in and be like, I'm gonna go home.
At 17. She's like,
I think
it's not for me.
I think when you're in that deep, you know, you want to call it quits a lot sooner.
Sure.
But you're like, I've committed to this. So I think it's really cool that she quits.
She called it. And she was like,
before it got too.
She was like, this isn't the vibe I came here for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I good think for that's her.
That's awesome.
But so she went home and mm-hmm. she got her GED.
Good for her.
She took some classes at community college, but unfortunately, things kind of like
got hard.
Her father died.
And she went back to Colorado?
Yeah. And I guess she had gotten married.
Sometimes so you accidentally get married.
Sometimes you're 18 and you get married.
Yeah.
So her marriage ended in divorce and she was like sad about it.
How long was she married for?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But from what I'm gathering, not long, because young.
You know, if you get married at 18, don't do your entire life. Guys,
not
you can get married but like, maybe at 18, don't. But guess what? Who I was at 18 versus even 25?
I don't even know.
Could
you imagine meeting your 18-year-old self right now?
I'd be like, girl, so annoying. Stop talking. Oh my God, you love Metro Station so much. Stop.
You love Metro Station. Like the most
mid-band. Have you even listened to The Killers yet?
Do you know music?
You know Mr. Brightside? Congratulations. Maybe fucking open your horizons. There's so much more. That's what I would say. I'm being honest. I loved Metro Station, but they haven't done much. But that was very 2008 coded, so.
Yeah.
Okay,
go on. So
ignore my Metro Station comment. You just looked at me blankly.
I was like,
you're like, too. I can't relate.
So, yeah, she just kind of, like, her dad died, and then she got a divorce.
You know what? That's a really young age, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because who knows and what age she was.
And she struggled with addiction for many years. Oh, so no. She had a lot of periods of, you know, like, seasons of her life where she was completely sober. And then seasons of her life where she was fully
I'm in sure her she addiction. Was struggling.
So start it was, again. It's never like a... There's not a gray
it's
ground.
It's in not there. Linear. It is.
It's an up and down. Yep. Like, she's either sober or she's not. And when she's not sober, she's like all fucking in.
Yeah.
And so. But
when she's sober, she's all fucking in. So, you know,
true.
It's one extreme.
And
to
so
the next.
In 2015, her family reported her missing again. Luckily, she's now stable. She's working as a coordinator in a hotel kitchen and she's doing peer support. For other people in recovery.
I have to say, like, I really love
Emily
when I hear people go through hard times and you hear that they are supportive in programs that they were probably associated with and they're successful because it shows like if you want it hard enough, you can do it.
Yeah.
But you can't have somebody want it for you harder than you should want it for yourself.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're moving on to Heather Yeagle. She said that her last memory of her father is of federal agents hauling her away from him. Her parents literally fought over her, like not in a custody situation, like literally physically fought over her. And her father got a hold of her and drove her to a Seminole reservation in Florida.
Okay.
He was a member of the tribe.
From what state was she driven to Florida?
It doesn't say.
Okay.
But days later, an FBI agent came to retrieve her. So the next few years of her life were like kind of chaotic and tumultuous.
I mean, if your parents are fighting over you, not even like, in physically. A court. Yeah, I think probably things were not going well.
So she and her mother traveled around a few different states. They were homeless. Her mother met a man. They became involved. And basically, this dude was a shitbag. He sexually abused Heather.
Oh,
a few years later, Heather confided in her mother and she was like, here's what happened. And her mom was like, you're a liar.
I was about to say, let me guess. You're a liar because boyfriends don't.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
So obviously,
what age was she? Or
she was 5 when this happened, which is horrible.
Awful.
So obviously she felt betrayed.
How can you not believe a fucking 5-year-old? They don't know implications of what they're saying.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like, sorry. That's just one thing that infuriates me. It just like
makes me so sad.
Well, like, believe your fucking children. Like, guys, believe your children.
Yeah.
Your children at the end of the day are going to be there for you. That stupid fucking boyfriend you met off Bumble, Tinder, Hinge, name it, isn't. Like, they're temporary. There's dime a dozen.
So it was just, it really like kind of like scarred her.
Sure.
So
understandably,
Heather made a few attempts throughout her like youth to run away, but she always ended up being like returned to her mom. But when she turned 16, Heather's friend Steven, he's just like some dude in the neighborhood, he offered to help her. So Steven had lost his fiance in a car crash.
That's really sad.
He was 25. She was 16. So they kind of bonded. They bonded a little bit over like their traumatic experiences in life.
Yeah.
And although at the time when they fled to West Virginia, they were not in a romantic relationship. They were like, oh, let's go to West Virginia. We can get married. Because 16-year-olds could legally get married.
You cannot convince me they weren't romantically involved.
At this point, they weren't, because he wanted to basically, like, he thought that if they got married that he would kind of become her legal guardian and he could kind of protect her.
Have you heard of Steven Tyler?
So police ended up finding them. They sent Heather back to Florida. They were like, get out of here. Steven followed her back. They ran away again. This time, they went to rural Mississippi. Heather still lives there. And they found an arrangement where they helped manage an apartment complex. In exchange for managing this complex, they could have their own apartment. So it was kind of like a trade.
Sure.
And 3 years went by. A tenant approached Heather and they're like, hey, why are you a runaway? And she's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, oh, girl, I seen you on MTV. And she's like, what?
Can I just say something? I think it's a little bit fucked up. It's and maybe they wild. Don't have any contact information.
But like,
that they're not.
They don't even know.
None of the people you've told me so far. None of the people you have told me they're so like far were missing. Like, I'm aware of it.
In what way?
Everyone's like, I'm not missing. And then like, you are. And you're fled. Like, and they're like, I am. But like, why do you know that? Yeah.
So she fucking like is like, okay, let me look at MTV. She watches MTV. She's like searching for the video. She finally sees the video. And she's like, oh my God, this is like the worst fucking picture of me. It's like her 9th grade yearbook picture her mom like tried to curl her hair. And she's like, I look like shit, dude. Like, can you imagine? Like, I can see my 9th grade picture in my head. It's disgusting.
Can I tell you what my 9th grade picture was? Can I tell you?
Yeah.
Okay. Listen up, because it's bad.
Listen up.
I'll
tell you mine.
I will die for my sister.
Oh.
But she took my hair, and she, like, did this thing where she twisted it up.
Love a twisty.
And pinned it to the back of my hair.
Oh, no.
Took another one. I'm not doing it, but I'm saying. She
was doing, like this, fake cornrows?
What?
Essentially?
Like, the non-racist version. Like, it was, like, basically shook my hair and, like, either braid. I don't know if it was like, braided or twisted. Hey, babe,
did you just go on a vacation?
But it was just, like, pinned.
But did she put pinned, some beads in pinned. It?
No, it took 15 minutes
to do. It looked cute in, like, real life, but, like, photograph-wise. Your forehead looked huge.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, like, when you pin your hair back
what I'm saying is, like, no.
I look bald.
You are correct. Because at 15, I had my hair, like, I had a 5 head when I was 15.
How do you have a 5 head? How did it shrink to a 3 head?
Because I grew into it.
You grew into your forehead.
I grew into my forehead.
It averaged out.
Thank you. But when you are young. Taking
statistics.
I love you so much for it. But when you are younger, like, I'll be honest, guys, I grew into my looks. Thank God.
Oh,
thank
my God. Thank God. Should we post our 9th grade pictures? Oh, my God. Let's do it.
Karen, okay, send it to me.
Mine aren't cute.
Okay.
I'm like,
I'm going to post at the end because I always do. This is the sound
my 9th grade picture makes. Okay. So, anyways. We're back to it.
Shut the fuck up, Kim. I got shit to tell you about.
She was also like, how dare you? This is the worst fucking picture of my life.
Okay, but like, which, we get that. We understand. Get that. That's yeah, it sucks when your mom picks a bad picture.
Okay, so Heather's like, thanks what a the lot. Fuck? She sees herself on MTV, and she's like, how dare you? At this point, she's 20. How dare you? 20.
Girl, be over it. And she's
like,
20.
I didn't even know my mom was still looking for me. Like, how, what? I'm an adult. So she called the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and she's like, hi, why the fuck am I in this video? And they're like, hey, baby, you should contact your family. And she's like,
no.
What? So before the end of 1993, Heather got a call from the producers of the Jerry Springer Show.
Oh, God, a fucking course they did. God, it's so correlated, isn't it?
So she went to Chicago. Her mom, and her brother.
So she did it.
Reunited on the Jerry Springer Show.
Okay.
And she remembers it fondly.
Okay, good.
So she tried to, like, search for a tape of it. She was like, I want a copy. Because the segment would be the only time.
If it's good to you, as you would.
Yeah, it would be a documentation of the only time that her and her brother and her mom were all reunited in a positive during her young adulthood.
Sure.
So she had a good experience on Jerry Springer. Good. Which is like
wild. No, I love hearing that.
Yeah.
TBH.
Okay. So I do want to talk about some of the children in the video who are now either presumed to be dead or have been found confirmed to be dead.
I hate it, but I knew this was coming.
I was like crying last night at the last one.
You're gonna be fine, I promise.
Okay, so number one, Christina Benedetto. She actually passed away in 2019.
Okay, so she actually was able to... did they interview her?
They did not interview her. They interviewed her stepbrother. So she, in a very similar account of what her stepbrother said, in 1987,
okay,
her father...
6 years before the music video.
Vincent Frank was convicted of attempted sexual assault of Christina.
Oh, fuck that.
An account that matches information in the California Sex Offender Registry. Oh. Christina was 12 at that point.
No.
He went to prison, but the family life...
For that or for something else?
It doesn't say.
Okay.
Family life at that point did not get better. So at age 15, she ran away. According to her stepbrother, Frank, the runaway train video was one of the reasons that she called her mom and reconnected. But it wasn't till... like after she turned 18. So very similar to the other girls in the story where it was
sounds like a lot of them.
She was abused and she kind of like fled to get away from the situation until she was 18. She was like, well, now I'm legal and I can be an adult and now I can reconnect with you.
A lot of it sounds like, sorry, this is a really quick side note.
Yeah.
A lot of it sounds like they weren't like not open to being like closer family. It just sounds like to me that a lot of them, yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying.
They were kind of given no choice but to be like,
other than
I either escape or I like,
yeah,
suffer.
And because a lot of them waited till they were 18 and
yeah,
you can't to resurface blame them.
Yeah.
Because like, I feel like a lot of them, because we've heard so many stories of moms who were like, I was dating someone who sucked, but like, it's the way it is. Yeah. And it's like, no, it's actually not.
Exactly.
So I don't blame
Christina. She actually passed away in 2019. Yeah. She drowned in a hot tub. It was an accident where she actually had epilepsy.
Oh no.
So it probably, according to her stepbrother, it was all accident. Like, she was in the hot tub, she had an episode, she drowned, and at this point she was 44.
That's so young.
That's like, yeah, it's years later that she died, but it, like, she was found to be no longer missing at a certain point, and yeah, and then died of like a totally like not
violent,
nefarious kind of death.
I don't know, when people die super young, I think automatically, and I'm sure it's not just my brain, I'm sure it's other people's brains, we just jump to the conclusion of like something nefarious had to happen. Yeah, absolutely.
So there's also Curtis Anthony Huntzinger. This boy was 14 when he disappeared from Blue Lake, California on May 19th of 1990. He originally was considered a runaway, but as years passed, police were like, perhaps maybe there is foul play.
Yeah.
So in the days before he went missing, he told his parents and police that he was being sexually assaulted by a family friend, 35-year-old Stephen Hash. Now, this dude was charged with voluntary manslaughter in Curtis's case in December of 2008. Days later, he attempted to plead guilty, but the judge refused to let him for some reason.
Thank God.
I mean, I don't know. You should plead guilty.
Oh,
voluntary manslaughter. Sorry,
in my brain, I heard not guilty.
Oh no.
Sorry, in my brain, I was like, not guilty. Yeah, oh my God.
He tried to plead guilty, but the judge was like, no.
Okay, so, what the? Sorry, in my brain, which I'm like, in my brain, I'm I'm automatically assuming thinking not guilty. Yeah, so I'm like,
but so
why would they not let him plead guilty?
I don't know. I'm not really sure.
That's
why.
That's so fucking weird.
But he actually led the police to Curtis's body, which, this is so shitty, was entangled in tree roots in a shallow grave located off of Old State Route 299 between Blue Lake and Corbel.
What a disrespect to like his family,
mm-hmm,
to his friends. Sorry, in my brain, I already assume child predators are gonna say not guilty.
Yeah,
no. So do you like how my brain, like, you're saying guilty, and I'm like, oh my God, not guilty. So
he was sentenced to serve 11 years in prison and pay a total of $9,000 in restitution.
And his name is Curtis. And how old was he?
He was, I'm scrolling.
Sorry.
14.
So he served just 3 years less than
Curtis was 14 when he died. Stephen was
But
the
Stephen
person.
Served 11 years, so he just
35-year-old.
So he served just 3 years less than Curtis's age.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
That's fucked up. For a death. In $9,000 in restitution fines, I'm just
kind of
like,
oh, it's an accidental death.
But
he's
I'm
a
like,
child.
How are you even paying that? Like, you know they're not paying that.
No, of course not.
Okay, so Andrea Bowman was 14 years old when she was last seen at her home in Hamilton, Michigan on March 11th, 1989. Okay, this is, like, more recent that this was resolved. in January of 2020.
Oh, shit. Okay. So 5 years ago.
Yeah. Dennis Bowman, who adopted Andrea when she was 5 months old, confessed to her murder. At the time, he was already in custody pending
trial. And I'm sorry, when did she go missing?
She went March 11th, 1989.
Okay.
He, in 2020, confessed. That's 31 years later.
Disgusting.
And the only reason that he even talked about this was because he was in custody pending trial on charges of a murder in a completely unrelated case of a 1980 murder of a woman in Virginia. Her name was Kathleen Doyle, and she was 25 years old. So in the spring of 2020, Andrea's remains were found in a shallow grave on Dennis's property. And on May 15th of 2020, he was charged with the murder, child abuse, and mutilation of a body.
That's so fucked.
Wild.
That's so fucked.
Okay. Okay. We're on number four.
Okay.
Of the...
It's like hurting my heart.
I know.
No,
This is the one that made me cry.
Okay.
Okay. So, March 18th, 1981, shortly after 10 a.m., Tommy Gibson, was last seen playing outside his home in Azalea, Oregon. He's the youngest boy featured in the Soul Asylum video. He was 2.
I don't know.
Tommy's father.
And what year was this? I'm sorry.
When he went missing?
Yeah.
91.
91. Okay. I'm just wondering, like, in correlation to the music video, because it's very much teenager.
Yeah, it's all recent, and okay. It's, like, he's the youngest
So one. He'd be, like, fucking 4.
Well, he was 2 it, like, in the time
in 1991, that he went missing, so 4? Yeah. By the time the music
video went out. So, Tommy's father, Larry Gibson, who was the Douglas County deputy sheriff, told authorities that he took
What state?
Oregon.
Okay. Sorry, there's a Douglas County
yeah,
here.
Yeah, there's a Douglas County.
So here. My ears were like, what?
Uh-huh. No, he, just want to point this out again. He was the deputy sheriff. That's the dad.
So he had a higher up position, mm-hmm. is what you're telling us.
Uh-huh. He took a little jog around his property while his son was playing in the yard. Sorry, why are you leaving a 2-year-old and going for a jog?
I could understand a, like, child that's capable of watching themselves.
Yeah, like...
Not a fucking 2-year-old. Like a 6-year-old,
maybe.
That's...
A 2-year-old?
Could you are imagine you us leaving stupid? Ronan?
Like, no.
Not that he's 2, but like...
No.
In 6 months from now.
Absolutely like,
no.
Not.
No. Completely no.
So Larry said that he carried a handgun with him to shoot stray cats.
Also fucked up.
Weird.
That's also, that that's not normal. Area.
He claimed that he shot a cat near the area where Tommy was playing, but missed the animal.
Good. Even though that's fucking
weird. He continued on his jog and learned his son was missing after returning to the house 45 minutes later. I would never leave my 2-year-old in my front yard or in my backyard for 45 minutes.
Or anywhere.
Do you know the amount of shit that a toddler can get into where you're like, what are you even
Do
doing?
Do you remember when How I had him on my lap? He tried to grab the hydro flask to dump on himself, probably. Yeah. And my wine glass, like,
it's
what the fuck?
Wild.
So wild.
The family, you know, calls police to the house. They're like, our child's
makes
missing.
Sense. Yeah.
Larry was told not to report to work at the sheriff's office, but apparently dressed in his uniform and left the property approximately 25 minutes for approximately 25 minutes during the investigation.
So in addition to the 45 minutes
that he was gone, he was like, hey guys, you guys are investigating, I'm just gonna like head out.
He's a 2-year-old. He's not like he's a 15-year-old. 15-year-old, sure, fuck it. But
he stated that his 4-year-old daughter witnessed an unidentified couple pull into their driveway and abduct Tommy. Larry said that he was checking a local rest area for signs of Tommy and the couple. While members of the community searched for Tommy, Larry sat at home. At one point, he told the searchers to give up and go home because it was snowing.
Automatically sketchy.
Red flags everywhere.
Yeah.
So authorities believe that Larry shot at a stray cat and killed the animal. And because there was a deceased cat that was found on their property.
But it's still like, why the fuck are you killing cats?
But what they think happened was that, I mean, a cat is small and you shoot a cat. They believe that the bullet traveled through the cat and struck Tommy as he was playing and that it killed him. And they thought that Larry noticed Tommy's body after returning from his jog and buried him in an effort to conceal the crime.
Understandable.
Larry completely denied this. He maintained his innocence throughout the investigation. He resigned from the sheriff's office. He moved to Montana. He and his wife separated in 1994.
Yeah, I'm sure there was.
And she took their 3 children and moved back to Oregon. Larry's estranged wife and his daughter later changed their stories to authorities and said that the daughter witnessed his father hitting Tommy. She said that Larry then put the child's body into a black garbage bag.
Oh, God.
And put it in the back of his patrol car and drove away. He was charged with the murder of Tommy's case in 1994.
That's so fucked up.
Thank God. Because yeah. I can't. Like, no. I fucking can't. Like, I was literally, like, sobbing at this last night as I was doing this research. And I'm just like, how dare you?
A fucking baby.
Yeah. Your own baby. Okay, so prosecutors argued that Larry had a history of abusing his children and he was under stress at the time of Tommy's disappearance.
Clearly.
He had to care for the children while his wife was taking college classes. They theorized that if he didn't accidentally shoot his son, Larry lost his temper and beat him to death. Larry was ultimately convicted of second-degree manslaughter in 1995, although he continues to deny any involvement.
Oh my God, dude. What the fuck? Yeah. You think they're not going to investigate this kind of shit?
Tommy's never been located.
Ugh.
Okay, so still missing. Wilda Mae Benoit was 14 years old when she was last seen in her home in Creole, Louisiana on July 23rd, 1992.
Okay.
She was last seen. She had been released from a hospital after a shoulder injury and was under heavy sedation at the time.
Okay.
She's never been heard from again.
That's really sad.
Authorities initially classified her case as runaway, but her family never believed that she just, like, left.
Yeah.
Her stepmom made a public post in 2003. If Wilda Mae happens to read this, I would like her to know that, that he has been sober for quite a while now. She's just saying that, like, it made people think that she'd been trying to get out and away from the situation at home.
Okay.
So she may have traveled to Florida. There's just, like, not a lot of evidence. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Okay, number two. At age 13, Andrea Durham was last seen in her apartment in Fort Walton Beach, Florida on February 1st, 1990. Her purse was left behind. We don't have much from that.
When purses are left behind, that's kind of... Yikes.
Sketch.
Yeah.
Three. Christina Ann Wood. She's been missing since 1991. I don't have
much information. I'm sure a lot of these, there's not much. It's just they're missing and praying for the best.
Four. At age 15, Dwayne Fochtman was last spotted in the downtown area of Lincoln City, Oregon on July 22nd, 1986. One of Dwayne's right fingers was crippled and he had previously fractured his ankle. He may use the first name Dwayne, obviously. Like, well, they spelled it different. Dwayne originally was spelled D-U-A-N-E, but he might
use
D-W-A-Y-N-E.
Yeah.
Not much else is known about this. Five. At age 17... John Lango was last seen wearing jeans and a gray jacket as he walked away from his Pottsville, Pennsylvania home at midnight on January 1st, 1988. He was leaving his residence and he never returned home.
Yeah.
He has never been heard from again.
New Year's is a hard
time. He was a student at Pottsville Area High School. There's not a lot on this one.
Yeah.
John has a burn scar on his upper right arm and was wearing a gray jacket, blue jeans, and Adidas when he went missing. Like, there's just not a lot, and it makes me so sad. Byron Eric Page was an honor roll student. He was last seen at a bus stop in Los Angeles on January 29th, 1992. He was trying to go to a music warehouse where he was basically going to, like... He was, like, a regular there. Like, people kind of knew him. However, employees never, like... Even though he was a regular at that store, they were like, yeah, he wasn't here that day. So,
okay. So that doesn't help sketch. Them in any way, shape, or form.
He never returned home that evening. Byron was a camp counselor at a local YMCA. He was doing a work experience program at the LA International Airport. He was making the honor roll. He was in perfect school attendance for five semesters. Like, he was, like, doing some good things. He had a PSAT score that was among the top 6% of Black students. And he was qualified for an academic college scholarship. So he was, like, doing things.
Did he ever qualify for it in some way, shape, or form? Or do we not find out
much? It just says that he was qualified for it. Okay. He literally had, like, no reason to leave. Apparently, foul play is suspected, but I don't have details on why authorities think that. That's all I've got, is that they think...
I mean, what else could have happened?
Like, he was gonna live the best life. Like, he was set up for the future. Okay, seven. Kimberly Doss. She was 16
years full old. Name.
Kimberly. Oh, I was like, why are you gagging?
I was like, the full name.
So,
Kimberly, how's the last name spelled?
D-O-S-S.
Okay.
She was 16 when she disappeared from Davenport, Iowa on September 1st, 1982. She has not been seen from or heard from since she disappeared.
Oh, no.
Okay, so here's something. So there's a charitable organization called Thursday's Child. This assists in homeless or at-risk teenagers. They claimed that they made contact with Kimberly in 1984, 2 years after her disappearance.
Okay.
They stated that she was working as a sex worker on Hollywood Boulevard, and she was under a pimp named James Wiseman. She had straight bleached blonde hair and was using the name Kimberly Gardner. The woman at Thursday's Child said that she was approximately 4 inches taller than Kimberly was reported to be. However, Kimberly's mother did not believe the Hollywood woman was her daughter, so they didn't investigate further.
I mean, you can only do so much.
Yeah. Okay, 8. We're almost there. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
But we got 2 more. 3 more.
You good?
So, Christopher Matthew Kersey was 17 years old when he disappeared from his Eagan, Minnesota home.
Okay.
And he took the family van. This was on April 20th, 1990. He withdrew $200 from his savings account. And the next day, a handwritten note arrived at his parents' home. It was postmarked Duluth, Minnesota. So that's like a town that's about 2.5 hours away from Eagan. The note said Christopher had lied about being sick so he could use the family's car to get away. To, quote, not even I know where.
Okay.
He said he intended to take his own life. He apologized for hurting his family and loved ones. And 2 days after Christopher was last seen, the Dodge Caravan was found abandoned on the roadside in Itasca County in northern Minnesota, near the George Washington State Forest and the Chippewa National Forest. So basically, he like went somewhere like foresty and abandoned the vehicle. Christopher's grandparents lived in Grand Rapids, which was like about 20 miles from where the van was found.
Okay.
Inside the van were the keys and a note explaining who owned the van. Like, return this to my parents, essentially, which is like so sad. An extensive search of the area turned up no indication of his whereabouts. It's possible he hitchhiked. Like, we don't really know where
he ended up. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's so many different parts to all of this.
And it's believed that he did take his own life.
Oh, that's so sad.
Right? Okay, so Martha West Dunn, at age 15, disappeared from Dangerfield, Texas on September 5th, 1990. She was potentially with a male companion named Eric Glenn Owen. There's a theory that Martha and Eric traveled to Hayworth, Oklahoma. Eric's aunt lived there. They had several reporting sightings of the couple being there. Another theory is that they went to Kansas. Eric's mom lived in Kansas. Like, it's none of it's.
Yeah.
Maybe
who knows what's true, what's not. Sure. Yeah.
On September 30th, Martha's father got a call from a friend in Oklahoma, and he said he'd seen Martha and Eric together. He was basically like, yeah, they were dirty and hungry. He cleaned them up. He gave them food.
Yeah.
And then when the police went to investigate it, they just like couldn't find them. Eric and Martha were both heavily involved with drugs at the time they went missing. We don't know, like, maybe it's drug related.
Yeah, but who knows? Even then. Yeah. Because everyone wants to jump to, like, oh, it's drugs. But, yeah. like, at the same time, who fucking knows?
There's no evidence of foul play. Basically, the police are like, well, they just disappeared. Let's hope
for the best.
They wanted to disappear, essentially. Patrick Betts disappeared at age 11 from his hometown in Upland, California on January 20th, 1988. He told his mother he was going with a friend to play basketball.
He never returned.
He never came back home.
Yeah.
Patrick and his friend apparently went to the Pizza Chalet on Foothill Boulevard and Euclid Avenue at 9 p.m. They visited the establishment. Basically, they played some video games, and then Patrick was like, okay, I'm going to walk home.
I'm good to go.
A witness saw him leave with an unidentified adolescent male.
Does that make you crazy at the age of 12? They're like, wild. I'm going to go. You're like, no, do not.
Yeah. So Patrick's parents waited up all night for him. He just never
showed up.
Never showed up.
Yeah.
And his case remains unsolved. There's also number 11, Darlene Michelle Hungerford, apparently went missing in 1991. Some sites list her as found. We don't have a lot of information.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Michelle Ann Farley, because there were a couple that were like, they kind of replaced people as they found them and yeah. stuff. There's Michelle Ann Farley. She went missing in 1992. She is the one who was rumored to have been found alive shortly after the release of the video, and she was the one who told the band members, you guys ruined my life.
Okay. I was wondering when that was going to happen.
So there was a lot to this that took a while, but I didn't want to miss anyone, and I didn't
For sure, because there's a lot. Everyone's story is valid.
And I also didn't even cover, like, the people in the UK, because there were a couple girls in the UK that were shown on those videos that were reported as potentially being victims of a serial killer.
Oh, God.
So I'll cover those on a different date, because that's just like a lot.
There's a lot, yeah.
But I mean,
we'll try to post as many pictures as we can on
tried to find people. I didn't go over all of the people that were found, obviously, like, but
yeah,
I think they did do a good job of like bringing awareness to the situation. Yeah, however,
that's like a thing people were
not exactly trying to be found. So in a kind of alternate where we're like, oh, the police didn't investigate because they thought it was a runaway.
Like not necessarily.
Some of these people were truly like, yeah, I don't want to be found. I don't want to be found. So.
Well, I'll post as many pictures as I can on our Instagram. That's going to be Mysterious Mavens Pod, just on Instagram.
And if you have any stories that you would like to share or suggestions, whatever.
All that fun stuff.
Tell us things. Just email us at mysteriousmavenspod@gmail.com.
We are on Facebook and TikTok, but, you know.
Find us on social media.
All right. Self-careful yourselves.
Until next time. Love you. Bye.
Yeah, love you.